You guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
Recording.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott Warr. I'm not Don Freeman. I'm Scott Warr.
You're Scott. Scott.
And we have an interesting guest on today. We had our podcast with Dr. Phil Maffetone was a couple weeks ago. And we had a Nation member, Michael, I hope I pronounce this right, Chastain.
Well, it is now Chastain, yes.
And he sent us a message and said, you know what, you guys need to interview Gary Gillum.
And so we did. We didn't waste any time.
Right.
We called him that day. And next thing you know, a day later, we've got him on the line with us now.
Yeah. And Gary is an interesting guy. We're going to get into a lot of his stuff. But if you look at some of his race background, in fact, I have it in front of me right here. He's been racing, looks like since 2008, at least some ultras since 2008. You can correct me in a little bit, Gary.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
And I see one of the 47 races on here. I see one race that's more than single digit finishing. I mean,
wow.
So he finished in the top 10
always
in 46 of the 47 races. So I think he's fairly qualified to talk to us today.
Yeah. And one of the reasons Michael said, hey, let's get Gary on is, we went to school with Phil Maffetone about aerobic training and lowering our heart rate and being patient and using the heart rate monitor as a tool. And what Michael suggested is, hey, talk to Gary because he uses a heart rate monitor. So, Gary, welcome to Trail Runner Nation, and let's get down to business.
Yeah, sure.
Actually, I have one quick question before we get going.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know Michael?
I don't know Michael.
I wonder how Michael knows you.
I think he's my Facebook friend. He's my... My BFF, best Facebook friend.
That's nice. Yeah, I have a lot of friends, and on both sides of the fence where I'm friends and they're friends with me, and I think we've probably stood with each other in a line buying some shoes somewhere and not even said hello to one another. I'm offended.
I'm honored that he thinks that I'm qualified to comment on Phil Maffetone. Those are not shoes I would try to fill.
No pun intended. Nice.
Well, we've had a lot of, I mean...
He doesn't wear shoes when he runs.
That's right. We've had a lot of, had a really fun time with the Phil Maffetone interview and have gotten a lot of comments about heart rate training and slowing down and building your aerobic base. And
sure.
And we'd like to talk to you a little bit about that and your history.
Sure. I started out bike racing. My first love is cycling. In fact, to this day, I still tell people I'm a cyclist with a running problem. It's probably the other way around now. Now I think I'm a runner with a cycling problem.
Tell us a little bit about how much cycling, what kind of cycling is a bicycle built for two?
Or? Mountain biking. I just love being outdoors, love the mountains, I love trails. I mean, that's really why I'm trail running now. And, I've done, racing off and on over the last 20 years, mountain and road bike racing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I would say like the trail running, especially the ultra running, it kind of brings me back to my roots, like just the epic mountain bike races.
Hey, let me ask you a question specifically about mountain biking, because we run and we run a lot of hours and miles. Do you do that same type of training with cycling where you're out there for 4 hours and covering a lot of ground, or what does that look like on the mountain bike side?
It's somewhat a similar type of training. The thing with cycling is a lot of the training you do is pretty intense group rides is what I, so I did, I think I did a lot more intensity in my training as a cyclist. In fact, I think I remember you know, I've always used a heart rate monitor, and I think I first saw the book by Phil Maffetone like 20 years ago, and I, you know, the idea that you can get faster by running slow is, you didn't really buy into it then, and I'm warm to the idea. I think there's, you know, I think there's probably more to it than that. I don't think you can just simply, you know, say that, boil it down to that it's just running slow is going to improve your speed.
Hey, Gary, and if I could just jump in, and I may be, yeah. Give me a little flexibility because I may not have this exactly right. But Mark Allen was the triathlete that really he's used as an example, and I'm talking about Dr. Maffetone, and I say don't hold me to it. Maybe some of these numbers are a bit off, but I don't think so. And it's on the last podcast. He said he trained with Phil at 141 beats per minute, and he was running an 8:30 minute pace. And then he worked with them, keeping his heart rate low in his target zone. And then sometime later, I'm not sure of the time frame, he was then running at 141 beats per minute, a 7:30 minute pace. And again, through the same process, brought it down to a 6:30 per minute pace at 141 beats per minute. And then finally, as fast as 5:40 minute miles at 141 heart rate. That's
I
my
even said 5:10 or
oh,
but,
yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, yeah, let's pad it a little bit on the slower side, right. Just to keep
the
story
honest. I don't know, it seemed pretty improbable to me. So, I don't know, it's like just that formula, like it's hard to imagine that's going to be replicated by anyone else.
It might have been so just amazing athlete,
right.
You know, Mark Allen too, that you know, you can only it's not going to happen with Scott or I.
Yeah, I think probably, I mean, part of it may be, you know, you take somebody that just has a tremendous training volume. I mean, what, you know, he, you know, I think, you know, I saw some of his a description of like Mark Allen's training plan, and he was put in probably 30 hours a week, you know, of training volume. And I don't think you. I mean, that amount, that training volume, you just can't incorporate that much high intensity and recover. I don't think.
Yeah. So
that kind of volume.
So tell us why you started using a heart rate monitor, even back in your mountain biking days, and how you used a heart rate monitor to help you train better.
Well, let's see. I'm an engineer is my background, and so I'm really into data and analyzing data, and you know, I feel kind of naked without my heart rate monitor and my GPS. But it's I'm going to just give you a few examples of how I use it. I know probably, you know, within a couple beats for like a given distance race, anywhere from say 10K up to, 50 mile race, 50 to 100 or even 100K, you know, what my heart rate is. So it's, you know, for example, I'm say 10 beats below max for a 10K my 50 mile heart rate is, you know, somewhere around, you know, 20 beats below my maximum. So I kind of use that, you know, that's sort of my tachometer. So I can, I try to, I run with heart rate during the race. It's tough to do because you're kind of watching the other people around you, but it's, you know, it's my best gauge to know if I'm starting out too hard or too slow in a race.
Do you have enough discipline to hold yourself back with the race group that you're running with, especially as a lead runner? Are you able to just shut down the race mentality and mind your watch?
That's the tough thing. I guess it's evolving. I've depends, you know, who's around you and how competitive the race is. I'm definitely guilty of starting out too fast in a race. But, you know, I think probably my, you know, the best I've done, you know, with, you know, I was pretty happy with the, with my approach at the North Face Championships, the 50-mile race in December. And, you know, there I just, you know, made a pledge with myself not to count how many people were ahead of me, and just to really, you know, stick to, you know, that predetermined effort. And that worked out well. You know, I moved up, a number of spots in the second half of the race. But it's a crapshoot. So it's, you know, it can be, you know, there could be times when you'll catch people that started out too hard, or you may just, you may never make up the lost ground, but I think it, you know, with some luck, it worked out, you know, for that.
I've got a follow-up question for you on the heart rate. Do you have a different number for, say, a 50K, a 50-mile, 100K?
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example. So my maximum heart rate...
Hey, Gary, I had to go get an internet connection thing, and so I missed that you'd already asked that, so I'll cut that out. So forget I asked that question. Okay, so I'm sorry to have re-asked it. I had to leave the table for a second. Good thing we're not recording live. What was that answer? No, I'll go back and listen.
It does work out pretty well. That so I have, like, so for example, my 50K, my heart rate is around between 180 and 182, and that sounds pretty high for most people. But my maximum is in the low 200s. So, I'll look at what my average heart rate was at the end of, you know, after a race, and between a good day and a bad day, it doesn't vary that much, but it might be, my best races, I've been able to sustain a, you know, slightly higher heart rate for that race. For like Way Too Cool, for example, last year was around 181 that day. 181 to 182.
Oh my goodness. Well, we've got to come clean, Gary, and tell you why we invited you on, all right? And here's the reason. Scott Warr and you two are brothers that have been lost. Because
wait. Let's clarify.
Oh, I'm gonna clarify, my friend.
Let's clarify. He's finishing at the front of the pack.
I know.
In that regard, we are not brothers.
You're brothers in heart, but you're not brothers of feet. Okay.
There we go. That's better.
Because Scott has been wrestling with the fact that he has a higher heart rate than almost anybody he's ever met. And we're both running down the trail, casual breathing, casual conversation, and he looks down and he's at 155, 168. If I'm at 168, I've got an oxygen tank and somebody pounding my chest if I'm at 168, right? He has no problem with it. So, I mean, if you ever need a heart donor, he could donate for you and it would fit just fine.
Well, and let me correct something else you said.
Oh, good.
You say I don't have a problem with it. After talking to Phil Maffetone and running with you and running with other people, and I'm finding out we're going the same speed and same give or take perceived effort.
Yeah.
I'm at 168 and Don's at like 128. And it bothers me a lot. And in fact, we asked Phil Maffetone after we stopped recording, and he just said, don't worry about it. He said that maybe you did more anaerobic stuff as a kid, and maybe there's some genetics in there, but it still didn't sit well with me. And so I'm glad we're talking because I'm glad.
It, you know, I think you can't just put a general rule of thumb with the number. That's the one, thing he's, he tells you to take 180 minus your age and either subtract some or add some to that. But it's, I think there's just too much variation to really, I think somebody's gonna, think that equation is the gospel when it's just, there's too much variability from one person to another.
So Scott started breathing a bit easier after he learned that, you know, there's somebody else with a similar heart that's running successfully, because he was scratching his head saying, you know, maybe I need to be a hiker.
You know, one of the funny things, Gary, is shortly after our interview with Phil, Don and I were out on a Saturday run, and I had a heart rate monitor on, which I normally don't use because it makes me mad that I have such a high heart rate. And I said, you know what, Don, you go ahead and go. I'm going to try to keep my heart rate at 135.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that I can't even run at 135. It's like a fast walk in order to keep it at 135. And it just made me mad.
You know, and the condition, you know, and it also depends on if you go somewhere where it's very humid or you go to altitude, it just, you're just going to have a totally different response, your heart rate to the conditions. So, when I ran the Zion 100 miler last year, I actually tried to program in a heart rate alarm, and I decided what heart rate I was going to run the whole race at, and it just but we got there and it was just extremely hot, and it was just, I mean, if you that you'd be just at a crawl if you tried to stay below that, your heart rate limit there. So it's, you really gotta, take into account the conditions. It's just, a lot of people think there's just hard, fast numbers but it's not that easy, not that simple.
We actually had one of our members write a question for you that had to do with heart rate, and it is from Trent Paulson. He was saying that, you know, he jumps out of bed in the morning and within 15 minutes he's running down the road, and he finds that his heart rate is all over the place for the first few miles, and then it finally starts leveling it out. Do you find the same thing happening? Would you recommend that he does a slower warm up, or is there any?
Yeah, I mean, I always do a slow warm up, but I don't pay any attention to what the data is in the first mile, because it takes at least a mile. It takes me sometimes, a good 15 minutes or so before it really stabilizes. It depends how fast you're running. I mean, if you're running a 10K race, it's going to come up, or you're doing a steep hill climb, it's going to come up pretty quickly to whatever the intensity you're at. But if you're just out for your regular run, it's just the first mile. I wouldn't, pay too much heed to what it's telling you.
So with you running with a heart rate and you saying that Dr. Phil's philosophy of always running at an aerobic pace and building that aerobic, that you think that's interesting, but you may not think that that's the correct way to do it. When you're out training and you're using your heart rate monitor, are you the majority of the time under the aerobic pace, but then you see a hill and say, okay, now it's time for some power training and let's get my heart rate up to that low 200s and work out the anaerobic?
Yeah, I think I spend I'd say it's I'm doing very little speed work and very little anaerobic training. I think I believe in saving the hardest efforts for racing, and so I'll typically race like once a month, and when I'm racing, that's a full gas effort. I mean, it's a steady effort, so I'm not anaerobic at an ultra. I mean, I'm maybe right at the finish line, of course, but I'm getting I believe in spending a lot more time training and then racing, and I save the hardest efforts for my races. Otherwise, it's, you know, I, you'd want to, kind of burn all your matches in training. Maybe that's one way to look at it.
As you're out there training with your heart rate monitor, what's your training heart rate, and then where do you cap your racing heart rate? What is the gap between those two?
Yeah, I typically run I'll do a longish run every other day, and that's so 2.5 hours to 4 hours, and I don't I'll run typically like every other day, and so I run I never do two workouts a day, and if I'm running back to back days, it'll be one day will be an easy day. But so most of the runs are long and hilly and pretty mellow. I'll run with a group of friends often on a weekend when I'm not racing, and it'll be, really mellow. Like my heart rate will be, 120, 130. And then when I'm by myself on the longer runs during the week, I'll be, probably, I guess the best way to describe it would be it's like much slower than my 50-mile race pace. Sometimes I'll do a little bit of, maybe once a week I'll kind of get it kind of into that, maybe do a little bit of harder effort where I'm maybe close to a 50-mile race pace, but not for long.
And what's that beats per minute, your 50-mile race pace? Is that going to be...
The 50-mile race pace is low to mid-170s. So the 50-mile races I've done better at is like North Face. I was 175 average the whole time. The races where 50-mile races where I've done, well, but maybe not had my best day was probably 170, around there. 170, did 172. I'd say probably a good example of running too hard and paying the price was Lake Sonoma last year. And for me that was a really in terms of racing ultras, I think that was probably the best lesson I had in effort was in pacing. Last year's Lake Sonoma, where it was just an incredibly deep field, and so you had Dakota Jones up front just running, incredible course record pace, and you had 10, 12 guys trying to follow, and just kind of there was blowing up, as he went along. But that, the Lake Sonoma, we ran the first 10 to 15 miles, and I was at my like 50K race pace. And so I like high 170s, low 180s that. And so, I paid the price there and slowed down a lot.
You know, what jumps out at me is running with friends, at 120 yet able to hold 50 miles at 170. The gap between that 50 beats per minute gap really shows that you are on a casual, easy, take it easy, having fun Saturday trail run with some friends and not pushing hard at all. Coming back probably feeling just about as fresh as when you started at 120. Some people walk the mall at 120.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, that's fantastic.
But I think to some extent what Phil Maffetone says is true about how the speed does come. So sometimes I'll be, I'll be out on a long run just thinking, I can't fathom running, 20% harder than this, or whatever, for 4, 5, 6, 7 hours. But it happens, when you get to that.
Yeah, I've heard people say, and I'll, for the record, I've never said it, but they say, I can't run slow. It's too hard. Right. I don't find going slow hard at all. I kind of like it, but
I think Mark Allen said that to Phil.
I think he didn't want to. He said he didn't want anybody seeing him. Run
oh, that's
slow,
right. That's right.
And he said run at night. do you find any gait issues or anything, you know, as you slow down, or do you have any issues with that or thoughts?
Well, not particularly. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it's going to, I mean, I don't think it does any, you know, I don't think it's harming your form, if that's what you're saying.
Now, how about food and nutrition? Are you out as you're out there and think and recall back to the 100-mile versus maybe the 50 and the 50K stuff? Do you find that there was were you surprised at the you know, double the distance of the nutrition requirements?
Yeah, so you know what I do in training and racing, it just seems to work fine. I kind of just focus on how many calories an hour I'm bringing. Like I'll plan to go if I'm planning to go for a 4-hour run in training, I'll bring 800 calories. So because I'll need somewhere between 150 and 200 calories an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I pretty much eat the same thing in races as in training. I eat gels and chews, and I've never had any stomach issues at races. So you know, for races up to 50 miles, I'll have like just gel, and that works for me. But I think that just it is just getting, you know, getting those that number of calories in every hour, it works for me in training and it works in racing.
What would you say for you is your Achilles heel, if you will? What do you have to guard most against in a race? Trying to protect, you said no stomach issues. Other people might say my number one problem is guarding my stomach and protecting it. Is it feet?
Right.
Is it mental attitude? You know, what is it that you have to monitor the closest?
Right. I think about that all the time. What are the things that are going to slow me down?
Uh-huh.
Muscle cramps and, you know, a long, hard race. You know, there's, you know, going too hard, too far, everybody's got a certain point at which they're just going to, you know, they're, you know, I especially, you know, towards the end, if it's beyond 50K, I have, I've had problems with muscle cramps, and it'll slow you down a lot. So I've been able to cope with it, and I kind of find there's like for a certain distance, there's a certain intensity after which it's just your muscles are just going to rebel. So I kind of like. And it's almost, I don't know, it's kind of uncanny. I can kind of, there's a point where, you know, I know by, you know, in part using my heart rate to know how my intensity, you know, at what point, you know, I'm going to cross that threshold where I'm in, you know, bigger danger of, you know, of muscle cramps.
You know, this sport is a science. You just don't go out there and do it. You're monitoring your heart rate monitor like a RPM, like a race car driver might look at the RPM gauge. You know, as you were saying that, it was making me think, we may put 10% more effort as you're getting to your maximum, you know, right at that threshold where you start working harder for very little return. You work 10% harder and you're not going 10% faster, you're going 3% faster. So pretty soon it becomes foolish, because as you extend yourself that 10% more effort, you're not going to be able to hold it very long. So there's that fine line that you have to monitor, watch, and acknowledge and know and understand where it is, so you don't get on the wrong side.
It's tricky. I mean, definitely it's the pacing for the ultras is really something I'm just is continuing to learn about and kind of changing, you know, how kind of, you know, my opinion on things that, you know, as I progress. I mean, I've been, you know, I mean, I've just graduated to the 100-mile distance just a year ago. And so, you know, I'm still kind of, I'm still always learning about what's going to work best.
What's your favorite distance?
I'd say 50 miles right now, because it's still something I'm trying to figure out. I just did my first 100 kilometer race this last month, was the Bandera, the 100K Trail National Championships. It's the 50 mile distance it interests me a lot, because it's fast. It's like a full gas effort, especially the bigger, more competitive races. But it's a distance where everybody's going to fatigue and slow down a certain amount, So that's that's kind of what I'm trying to refine is I know my best races I'm going to slow down no matter what with a 50K or longer you're going to slow down from fatigue, so it's just it's kind of solving that mystery of how do you slow down the least, and I don't know if I'll figure that out or anybody, but
you say that you graduated to the 100 mile distance. I read your race report on the Bear 100, which you did very well at. But there was a quote in there, and I don't know whether you referenced the author of it, or maybe it's just one of those urban quotes that gets passed around. But I really liked it. It says, you're talking about the 100-mile distance. It says, this is not a race of the fittest, but a race of adapting the best to the conditions.
That's a great quote.
Right. I guess you could argue now that at 100 miles, especially if you look at, the Western States performances last year. People are racing from start to finish, but the Bear, something that where you can win, and you win in a time 20 hours or so. There's that, just the survival element to it, where it's just there's times where you don't even feel like you're in a running race. You're surviving.
Yeah, a survival event.
Yeah, one thing that we want to talk to you about, and I'm just flipping through my papers here trying to find out when this was. I think it was last fall, where you and some friends of yours tried to break Killian Jornet's fastest known time for the Tahoe Rim Trail. Tell us a little bit about that, and why, here you just graduated to the 100-mile distance, and then you're sitting around at night and say, you know what, I think I should get a group of people together and let's go try to do 165 miles in record time. How does that, how do you make that leap?
Yeah, well, so, yeah, I mean, for me, that really did evolve. It wasn't just really on a whim where, I saw it as just this tremendous, it was a physical challenge, but also a logistical challenge. I'll be 45 this year. So it's, kind of my narrow competition to be competitive. The window is narrowing. I wanted to take on just a big, challenge like that. At first I had an idea that I was going to try to do a fastest time with some combination of mountain biking and running, and then it evolved. I took a close look at what Killian's time was, and I thought if I could be an expert in planning and be really smart about the running and just you know, really dial in the pace and nutrition, and not sleep is the other thing that, you know, that it could be successful. So, I think that was the biggest problem I had was just, was the sleep deprivation is, ultimately what got me.
You know, first of all, I think it's interesting that the way that you tackled this, rather than, you know, doing it solo with, you know, a bunch of pacers, you got together with three other people.
Elite runners.
Yeah, Adam Huey, Victor Ballesteros, and Ben Lewis. And you said, let's run as a group with some pacers.
Right.
So you have some pacers in case one of the racers decides or can't keep the pace. You know, the three continue and the one can stick back, you know, fall back with a pacer so there's not any harm there. So that's interesting. And then there's another interesting quote here that I absolutely like. It says, something like this is beyond a race. It's more like going to war. You have to shift from competitive mode to survival mode, and you feed off the energy of your teammates.
Mm, cool.
Right. And, you know, so the Bears, where I met Ben Lewis, who was part of our team for the Tahoe Rim Trail. And I think that was, you know, the camaraderie that you know, we had, you know, at the Bear, that was, you know, one of the big reasons I thought it would be, you know, advantageous to have somebody, you know, to have somebody, not just a pacer who just jumps in at mile 90, but, you know, somebody there, you know, with you the whole time or as far as they can go. It's arguable whether that was the best approach, but, you know, I think it was, I probably wouldn't do it again that way just because of all it's just so complicated logistically, but it was, you know, I'm still, you know, somewhat keen on the idea.
Yeah, I have a question for those of us that have run, you know, any distant race, whether it's 50K on up. We have the convenience of those aid stations and the energy of the aid station workers and an occasional person clapping along the way, and knowing that the next time you get to experience that wonderful moment where you're the king on the trail for a moment is just 6 more miles away, or 4.2 or 8. But with you, you have 165 miles to travel, and no markers, no real ribbons hanging, no people, you know, saying with a cowbell just around the corner, none of that.
Right.
You're just kind of out there. What was the difference of traveling that long distance without all those perks?
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's you know, I knew every inch of the trail ahead of time. I had my head wrapped around pretty well about, you know, about what was ahead of me. you can kind of adapt your mind to the challenge you have ahead of you. You just don't think of, you know, I mean, when you're set, you know, you're set to run 100 miles, the first 10 goes, you know, by like the blink of an eye. Whereas if you're, you know, if you're only going 10 miles and, maybe on a bad day, it seems like forever. You know, but,
mm-hmm.
So, I had my head wrapped around pretty well what was dealing with that distance, not stressing too much about how far how many miles were left to go.
You one of the things you wrote in your Bear race report, and I think probably moved over into this adventure there at Tahoe Rim, you talked about how you did not miss turns at the Bear because you had some GPS coordinates in your Garmin. And,
right.
And that's, I think, just brilliant and something I wish I was smart enough to know how to do and use my watch.
I wish
every race director just, like, automatically, you know, sent the...
the waypoints,
you know, the GPS file available. For...
I could see Don reading that part and his eyes getting bigger and bigger and his jaw dropping and saying, "I can put the coordinates in my GPS watch."
Did I buy the right one?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at how many people have, people have lost races for making a wrong turn, and it's like it's just no matter how much you study the course, a map ahead of time, if you've never seen the course and you just it's impossible to get.
Yeah, but Gary, you're an engineer. Do I have to get an engineering degree so I can pull this off, or could a common layperson?
No, I can show you how to do it.
Okay, good.
It's pretty simple.
Right on.
We need to do a separate podcast on a tutorial on how to do it.
No, it's pretty. You know, I mean, that was a lifesaver. I mean, middle of the night, and trudging along in the mountains and. And then all of a sudden my watch beeps and you look down and it says off course.
It beeps? Gary, I'm on this now. I thought I had to squint and see that my little breadcrumb was like off the little line. You mean it beeps and says, "Hey, Freeman, turn around."
It says, off course. And I at the Bear, I was just thinking oh my God, these some of the poor people that don't know to turn here.
Okay. I love it. So I think what we need to do on our website, we've got to talk to the ninja about this. We need to have a depository for some kind of waypoints for
races.
They probably have it, right? Yeah. What's it called? Waypoints.com or something.
Right. Well, I know. The thing is, and then the course changes. You never know 1 year to the next. So I can see why event promoters don't just post the course. Because it could change at the last minute, and then somebody's going to complain that they got lost. And
so I'm curious about a comment you made earlier. So we're going to link the race report there. Or I guess it wasn't a race.
The blog. Blog for the TRT, which was part of I Run Far. I mean, they had blogged it out.
Yeah, I'll link that. And those who are listening, unfortunately, the record was not broken. But you said earlier that you kind of have your mind still focused on this. Do you think you're going to go back and do it again?
Yeah,
is it going to happen soon?
I mean, there's unfinished business. Victor Ballesteros, our sole finisher last year, he's going back again this year, and I plan to help him out. I can see doing it again. It won't happen this year. I'm kind of, really feel focused on just racing this year. The TRT is just, it's a complicated problem because it's really longer than a race. I mean, I think of, something up to 100 miles or 24 hours as a race. But it's also too short to be a fast pack, so it's just this kind of it's a complicated problem that I don't feel like I can focus on this year, cuz I do plan on racing a lot. Putting all my energy towards, 50 mile and, up to 100 mile races this year.
What is your A race, or what are your A races this year?
Well, it's still kind of, the calendar's evolving. In the spring, I've got Way Too Cool, Lake Sonoma in April, and then the Miwok 100K in May. And then I just signed up for the Bighorn 100 in June.
That's in Wyoming, right?
In Wyoming, yeah, and I've heard just lots of great things about that. So I wanted to do a 100-miler, and I think that for my calendar, that works out really well. August, I plan to do the Pikes Peak Marathon, and mm-hmm. And then September, I'll be at the Ultra Race of Champions, UROC 100K.
My first thought when you said the Pikes Peak Marathon, my first thought was, what's his heart rate going to be on that thing?
Yeah, God, I'm gonna get out there early just to try to acclimate. But yeah, that goes up to 14,000 feet. So, yeah, we'll see. They have the ascent, which I won't do on Saturday, and Sunday is the marathon where you climb, 8,000 feet, 6,000 to 8,000 feet, and turn around and run back down.
That's crazy.
I'll be there. That's a part of the Sky Running series this year, and I'm with Team Innovate is my sponsor this year, and we have a small team that's going to be there for that event.
You know, I've always liked the looks of that Innovate shoe. They just look fast. You know, I've been attracted to that shoe for a long time, but I don't feel qualified to put it on.
Yeah, so no, I can't say enough good things about it. I was on the team in 2011, and so I'm back on again this year. But it's really set apart from pretty much almost every other trail shoe. It has a combination of lightweight, you know, and a really knobby tread that you just you just don't find in other trail shoes. Most trail shoes are, good for, have more of a, fire road, terrain, type tread pattern. And, the Innovates, maybe my background in mountain bike racing, years of mountain biking, it's like I have knobby tires on my mountain bike, and so I like a knobby tread on my shoes.
What model are you running in for those out there that are leaning Innovate and wondering what makes you fast and will make us equally as fast if we slip on a pair? What are you running in?
Yeah, so I have. Well, I use all of the lighter models. The name of the shoe is the tread pattern. So there's the X Talon. It's kind of a mud shoe, but I like the X-Tone a lot, even for dry terrain, because the knobs give you quite a bit of cushion too. So it's so for sure it helps in the mud, but the knobbier tread is also gives you that cushion. So the X-Tone and the Rock Light, and then the new model I have is the Trail Rock, which is I just started wearing those, and that's a pretty knobby tread. It's sort of an in between, but it's a super light, good all around shoe.
Okay, so we've never done this before, Scott, with a guest, and so it will either happen again or will never happen again. So here we go. You're going to go out on a trail run on Saturday. Give me your go-to sock. What are you slipping on Saturday morning?
My socks. I don't know. Most of my socks are Dry Max.
Okay.
I'm not married to that brand, but.
Okay. Well, and then let's move on up to the shorts. What kind of shorts are you putting on?
So I'll probably wear. I've been wearing. It's funny, but lately what I've been doing is, I hate to say it, but it's partly because of some knee pain I've had, but. I've been wearing my cycling knee warmers, I just wear any old running shorts, but I'll wear my knee warmers to keep my keep the blood flow to my knees.
Okay, Scott, put that down on my list. Saturday, I'm wearing knee warmers.
Hey, yeah, I'm the only one out there with knee warmers.
Okay, sleeves or you know, the sleeves for pulling up with short sleeve shirt or a long sleeve shirt? What do you do in the winter here?
Yeah, I always wear short sleeves and arm warmers.
Are you a beanie guy or one of those ear warmer things that you put around just with a beanie with the top off?
Headband.
I never wear hats, but I'll wear a beanie. But it's got to be really cold, like you know, low 40s or colder.
Got it. Yeah, for you people back east, low 40s. This is California. When it gets really cold, like low 40s,
here that's freezing.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you giving us some tips and things you eat, using a heart rate monitor, what you're wearing, and letting us get to know Gary a little bit. We'll see you out here at Cool because we're working Cool, not running it, and I'll get to run Lake Sonoma, so I'll see you in both places.
Great.
It'll be fun.
Cool. Yeah, look forward to seeing you there.
All right, Trail Runner Nation members, what do we do, Scott?
What do we do?
We tell them to go somewhere.
We tell them to go to trailrunnernation.com. We tell them to go to our Facebook page.
We've got a new website. If you haven't seen it, go admire Minja's work.
Load it onto your mobile phone. We now have a mobile version, which is rockin'.
It looks good. And Twitter at We Are Nation.
Yep. And go out and run.
Mas.
Yeah.